So welcome to you all. I appreciate very much your willingness to come here. But I appreciate seeing also so many different ages. I see some really aged grandparents. And that's really awesome. Because if you're a grandparent, your task is just beginning on a different level. And so I hope tonight I will not have the same experience as Donald Joy had when he presented a topic like this. And at the end, for Q&A, he had a very old-looking man raising his hand. And maybe he felt a little uncomfortable giving him the opportunity to speak because he was thought maybe the old man felt he was way too candid about the subject that also tonight I need to speak about. And Donald Joy was rather pleased when the old man said to him, "Where were you when I was 15 years old?" And perhaps that will be some of the experiences also of those who are old here. I see this man there with his cane. He went to the same battle that I went through when I was 15, 14, 13. Depends when your sexuality awakens, right? That goes all different ages. And he has been on the same journey that we've all been on and some of our kids are on right now. I'm dealing with a testosterone bomb at home. That's what I call them, because between the age of 15 to 18, we have more testosterone in our bodies as boys than we'll ever have in our life. It's 110%. That explains a lot about teenagers, doesn't it? Now, it's easy for you to go home tonight feeling utterly defeated and guilty. That's not my purpose. Yeah, if that's my purpose, then I miss it, because in some way, you're going to feel that. You're going to feel tonight, hey, I missed the boat. My purpose is not to look at the past and say, oh, you guys did it all wrong. My purpose is not to look at myself, I failed it all, because I do that too. My purpose is here to look forward and to help each other to be trained better, to deal with a subject that still today is not talked about enough. I spoke to the Rehoboth school community today, the older grades, and spoke of the boys in smaller groups, and I think it was two groups which I actually remembered to ask at the end, now how many of you guys have had chats with your parents about this subject? Grade 12, half of them only. That is a shock again and again. These guys have gone up to 12th grade, and their parents have not talked to them about their sexuality. And this is the purpose I want to do this tonight. That's what I experienced. And that's what so many others have experienced. So now I'm going to try to use my outline to talk to, and not my notes, because otherwise it will be midnight. As you look at this outline, you think, man, how in the world are we going to get through all this? So I've done my why is this topic. This afternoon or this morning, I used the imagery of the Whitewater River for our children. Yeah, picture it when they grow up as a child. They grow up in kind of a smooth, gentle river. Most of us, yeah, there are obviously exceptions that we have dysfunctionality. But in terms of our sexuality, it's a gentle river. But all of a sudden, we turn into our teenage years. It's like our river turns into white water. And I use that imagery to explain to the young kids and the younger men and women there that this is what you all will and have or are going through at this moment. And in order to manage the white waters, I don't know if any of you have ever done that. I've been there once and that's it. I never go to white waters again with these little kayaks. Man, I was freaked out from beginning to end. Right? But some people love that. And they just love that. But you need a helmet, you need a life jacket, you need somebody to guide you, hopefully somebody to follow you. So preparation is vital. very important for us today. Our children are facing not only white waters in their own journey, they face white waters in our culture that are absorbently sexualized. How many of you ever sell things on Marketplace? Facebook Marketplace? Yeah, probably more than that. Anyway, one of the women in our churches sold something on Facebook Marketplace the other day. After the buyer picked up the item, she received a text from him. This is what he wrote. "Maybe you think it's a strange question, but I find you a beautiful woman, and I have the feeling that it will click together. Are you open for some non-committal sex tonight?" That's the world we live in. This was a grown-up man approaching a grown-up woman who was married. No shame. If this shocks you, well, then at least you're still on the right track. But this is what our children are living in. Our culture is utterly sexualized. And you know that. I quoted here Tim Keller. He says, "The paradox of sexuality today is that it's both overvalued and undervalued. It is overvalued as if nothing is more important than sexuality. As if you're not a complete person if you don't enjoy or experience or experiment. At the same time, it's totally undervalued because it is made a consumption article in which you disconnect your soul from your body. As long as this pandemic continues, will the pain and the brokenness of all the boys and girls continue with these distorted images." So that's why the topic. We need to prepare our children to deal with this, and not just information. We've got books there. Thank you. These guys need 2 crowns for all the good books that I've seen there just about this subject already. Yeah? Now, you can give those kids the books. That's information. That's not enough. We need formation. That goes a step farther. Formation is when we walk through this information with our children, since they are this little, until they are this big, as mine is right now. It's actually not quite that tall, but he's taller than me. So I'm not talking to my boy at 15 years of age about sexual things for the first time in my life, because he's in the white water. You don't build a bridge in white water, you manage the white water. And so these books, excellent. Use them, read them. We'll come back to that in how to set the boundaries. And my second reason for doing this, parents, let's be honest. What is one of the best assets in you for helping your children? Your experience. You've been there. You've been through the rough waters, and you probably didn't make it well through that. Just like the old man said, "Where were you when I was 15? And when I was experiencing this stampede of feelings." You and I have experienced, I do have experience about handling my sexuality, or shall I honestly say, mishandling my sexuality. And sharing your pains is an important trade secret to share with your children. We like to shield our children from some of the things that we're ashamed about. Now, I have the opposite feeling. What I'm ashamed about is I don't want my boys to be ashamed about. So I need to be vulnerable with them and share the things that I don't typically share. That's a trade secret. And I encourage you, and it may be difficult, to do that. You know, we like to sometimes hide ourselves behind the facade that we had it all together when we were 15 or 14 or 16. Some of you may have had to get married because there was a pregnancy. That's a trade secret. That's, you don't want your children to go through that, do you? Some of you have had sexual encounters with people that you're not married with right now. That's a trade secret. You don't want your kids to have that, do you? But we hide that. And we pretend we didn't have those problems. But then you miss an incredible bonding connection with your boy and girls as they're facing the white waters. I've never felt in my whole life that being vulnerable makes me weak. As a parent, being vulnerable has made me more accessible. And that's what kids need. They need access to you. Access to your trade secrets. Yeah? So that's why we need this topic. Now, an ounce of prevention is more than a pound of cure, of course. And don't have to say much about that. Sexual sins are not in a special category. Even though it seems like in our churches, because the only sin you have to do confession of guilt about is about sexual sins. Right? This church too? My youth group asked me that the other day. Why don't we only have confession of guilt about sexual sins? Well, I says you don't about all of them, but about the ones that you go to see. Right? When you notice that somebody's getting pregnant and they're not married, then yeah, boom, you know that's an issue. But there's lots of other sins, but somehow in our mind, we think sexual sins are just in an extraordinary category. They're more sinful than others. God doesn't think that. For God, ungratefulness and sexual thoughts are both sin. And who is not ungrateful? And who doesn't complain? And who doesn't worry? And who's not covetous? They're all sin. So let's stop saying that. But let's not forget that sexual sins do have a more they're more damaging. I put it on my outline that way. They're more damaging. Now, if I steal your purse, well, that's a sin. But you can replace a purse. But if I steal something of your personalness, I cannot give it back. And the sexual part is something so personal. I cannot give that back or take it back when I've given it away. So in that sense, the Apostle Paul says that sexual sins are, all sins are committed outside the body, word, deed, but sexual sins are committed in the body, 1 Corinthians 6:18. Yeah, so they are therefore more damaging. And perhaps you know that. In my pastoral counseling work, you encounter that. People who are otherwise functioning well are struggling with the failures, the pains, the regrets, the wounds due to their sexual sins prior to marriage. Even couples that have been premaritally active sexually and then get married, often, particularly the wife, experiences struggles in their sexual life, even though they haven't done sexual things other than the spouse they're married to now. Why is that? Well, go read 1 Thessalonians 4. God wants us to keep our vessel in sanctification. He's the avenger of such who doesn't. And so when that's not dealt with and not, the wound is not cleaned out and there's no confession made and forgiveness sought, it festers even in your own marriage. But even more so, if we have been sexually indiscretion, have sexually sinned with others. Now, worse is the damage is intensified when there is sexual assault or sexual abuse or sexual coercion. Now, I don't have to really add more to that statement, but what I mean is sexual coercion is when your girl goes on a date with some young man in your church, and the young man is pushing her and grooming her for sexual favors. Well, he has no intention to remain committed to the young lady. A lot of that sexual activity during dating is not always consensual. And that's damaging. And we need to be open about that. Now, lastly, in our current culture, sexual activities are not seen as a special gift from God anymore. They're seen as an entertainment, as an entertainment or a recreational sport. This is awful to think about it. Yeah, that man who just sent that message to that lady on Facebook Marketplace, to him, having sex with someone, it's like going to have a coffee at McDonald's. No commitment. Just have some little time of fun. I mean, this is the way the world thinks. This is the way your children grow up. This is the kind of people your kids are growing up with as they're working at McDonald's. My daughter has worked at one of these coffee shops. I forget now what the name of it is. Oh, worked there for a year or two. And at one point, we got to talk to each other in family about, you know, meeting people that are living in the gay lifestyle. And he says, you know, children, once you work with these kind of people, how are you going to approach it? Dad, my daughter says, I have worked with these people for the last 2 years. There are only two of us on the whole job site that are not gay. That's the world they live in. Yeah, that's the world they live in. And so you and I need to be aware of it. You can protect them from that if you give them a job or you give them an opportunity to work outside of your house. Our culture makes sex equal to a casual dinner or having a nice coffee. College kids particularly, they have a fling for a night. They call it the fling. And I think they walk away the next day from that as if they just had, you know, like I said, at a meal, and maybe some of those meals give you some food poisoning, but no big deal. It is a big deal. It is a hugely big deal. And the reason that it is a hugely big deal is because, and I'll read this quote here, God created the sexual relationship to be the most personal, the most intimate, the most intense and deep-reaching mental, physical, and even spiritual activity that affects us personally. This is reserved. I'm going to use the word sacred. Sex is sacred to God. He says sacred. Yeah, sacred in the sense set aside, devoted to, barred in boundaries for a particular context. And the world doesn't think that way anymore. And we, therefore, as moms and dads, as grandparents, as church leaders, need to completely be aware and immerse ourselves in what is God teaching us. And therefore, the three P's of sexual education. And we'll come to the details in a moment. I want to prepare my children to remain chaste for marriage. My great motivation? Because I wasn't. I know I'm forgiven. I know God cleansed my sin. But I haven't forgotten them. And not only have I hurt myself, I have hurt others. And that is my chief motivation standing here before you tonight, parents. We don't want to perpetuate. Secondly, it is prevent them from drowning. As they are sexually awakening, our children are needing to be helped. I'll be honest, I had no one that helped me in my journey. My dear father, wonderful father, that subject he did not speak to me ever about. I don't want you to be like that. But I noticed today in the 12th grade classroom, half of the kids did not raise their hand. So there's still many who grow up like me. Can't do that today. Teen boys think 93%, don't know how they get to that number, but this is what the statistics are, 93% of their thoughts are sexual. That explains something about your boys? Maybe that will also explain something to girls about boys. And why is that? When your little baby boy is being conceived and growing in the womb, he already has 15% more testosterone in his little body before he jumps out the womb. He didn't make it that way. Our Creator gave him that. This is biology. When our children are in that stage of 16 to 18, 19, they are in the most booming stage of their life. When it comes to their pressures inside of their body, they can't afford to be alone in that battle. They got to have dad next to them, talking to them about it. Girls have about 10% of that hormone pushing them. So quite a little bit less. But boys are roaring stags. And they have all these lovely little does around them. And unmarried. I said to the guys and girls this morning, says, if we're going to go back in history 150 years, you guys be all married by today. Bliss, all right? Did you know that the word teenager didn't even exist in the 1920s? It doesn't even exist in culture. 1920s, no teenagers. You go from childhood to adulthood, boom, all of a sudden. And so they married young. And now our kids are in the most powerful, potent states of their sexual history, unmarried. They can't do this by themselves. Now, three, you need to protect your children from trespass in the sexual garden. I have done quite a bit of work on speaking on preventing sexual abuse, which I won't do tonight. But we need to do that very much. We need to protect our children from the garden intruders. It's kind of funny, or not funny, but maybe I'll come back to that. Let me just drop that thought. But if you read the Song of Solomon, chapter 8, and I'll read it to you, and you find a verse there in verse 4 that's actually repeated three times in the Song of Solomon. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, that ye stir not up, nor awake love until he please. Three times that verse. Yeah. So what is it trying to say is, and obviously you can spiritualize everything in that book, but for a moment I won't. I look sometimes at the book of Song of Solomon as the best marriage counseling book there has ever written. And if you look at it from that perspective, and you listen for a moment to then what we learn, you can learn so much from the Song of Solomon of biblical counseling on sexuality. And three times the young daughters that are not married are charged not to stir up nor awake the love. And then it comes to verse 8 and 9, this interesting verse. We have a little sister, and she has no breast, so she's still a young one. What shall we do for our sister in the day when she shall be spoken for? Now the sister's grown up. She's a young woman. If she be a wall, we build upon her a palace of silver. So if she is a wall that nobody gets into it because she is protected and protecting herself, Well, build a palace of silver. She'll be rewarded with a palace of silver. But if she's a door, she lets everybody in, we will enclose her with boards of cedars. That's a really beautiful thought in that. We need to protect our children from intruders. And if some of our children are perhaps vulnerable, they're a door, what am I doing to protect them from intrusion? And parents, we need to do more to protect our children from sexual damage as well as sin. Now, section number one, guiding our children to understand the sexuality. I'm going to go quickly through that. But I see it as my parental privilege of initiation. I have raised 8 children from childhood to adulthood. And all 8 of them, I have found it to be an extraordinary privilege to begin to unfold for them the beauty of what God designed in sexuality. And it is not the job of the friends to tell them that, not the job of the school to tell them that, or the church, but it is your task as mom and dad to do that. I see it as a privilege to lead my children in the first steps into this sacred space God has created for our delight. There's nothing sinful about sex. Is that how you think? We've made it sinful. And our sinful hearts makes it sinful. But the sexual relationship between a husband and a wife is very good in God's sight. He designed your sexual organs. I'll be very open with you. To experience exquisite pleasure has nothing to do with procreation or the multiplication of the human race. Why did our Creator design our bodies like that? The same that He designed my tongue to taste sweet and sour and bitter and spicy so I can enjoy the food. Now, have you ever thought about that? But we cannot make sex a taboo subject and a bad subject and no, don't talk to us about that subject. My friends, we're doing wrong to God when that is our mindset. The world is totally muddying and breaking it and fouling it. Indeed, we got to do just the opposite. And I've maybe shown you that example before, but I actually literally take a vase with 2 flowers or 3 flowers in different stages of their life. Flower that's just beginning to grow. You see the buds starting and the flower, the bud is just beginning to open up. And then the third one is a beautiful flower. And that's what I put in front of my kids as Michelle and I would sit down with them to introduce them more in the details of their sexuality. I would use just flowers. Said, kids, this is you when you are about now. Yeah, you're still young, you're developing. But not too long from now, if it's a girl, you're going to develop different parts of your body that are at this moment not ready. And then eventually you're going to be a full-grown woman, a beautiful flower like this. Right? And the boys make the same story. God is now going to prepare you for being a real man and a real woman. But guys, in this journey, what do you think would happen if I start pulling off a leaf here? Can I add it back here? No. What if we're going to monkey around on this bud here? Let's try to open up and see what's inside of it. And this one, let's do it again. What do you think? Is there going to be a nice flower when we get to this stage? Now, that makes sense, that picture. No. Now God is making you ready. And now we need to protect that. I need to guide you. And I need to help you that one day you can enjoy this flower as a man or as a woman to the fullest extent as your Creator wants you to enjoy it. And I am as a father and as a mother, we're committed to walk with you to talk to you, to help you. It's going to be a battle because people want to invade your flower now. They want to look at your flower now and maybe you'll crack it. And then when you get to your adult stage, you can never fix a cracked flower. So are you committed to work with mom and dad on this? Are you willing to do this with you? I've never had any of my kids say, no way. Never. It creates a bond and openness. Yeah? Don't want to make you feel guilty tonight, right? Say, oh man, I never did that. I understand. We're not looking at the past, we're looking at the future. This is why we're here tonight. So, sexuality is beautiful flower. Avoid the SCS code, sexual code of silence. It's a tough subject, I know. Some of you might feel really uncomfortable even sitting here tonight. I noticed this morning some of the kids were uncomfortable there. And when I did this topic a year ago in another different congregation on the West Coast, one of the elders came to me that evening when I spoke about this subject as well. Actually, I spoke about sexual abuse in that one. But he said to me, my daughter came home today, he says, you know, Dad, I've learned more today about this subject than in the first 15 years of my life. He said, you make me feel really bad. I says, well, I'm sorry, but it is actually bad. That means you didn't talk to your daughter about this. No, he says, I haven't. We don't want to be silenced about this. So we agree to that? Because if you are silenced about it, you instill another code, the SAA code. That's the silent about abuse. Really be honest, my journey of counseling started with counseling to prevent abuse. And then finally I realized I need to go one step further down the track. In order to stop abuse, we need to begin to teach each other to speak healthy, open, biblically, safely about sexual things. Silence about sexual things sets up your children to be more vulnerable to be abused. Yeah, I won't go into the topic now because that would be taking me way off track. But if they have never felt comfortable about speaking about sexual things, the sexual predator, here's a quote, a man, Pendergrass, works only with sexual predators in the New Jersey State Prison. And he wrote a book about that. It's not a book I recommend you to read. It's terrible. But as he opened up this subject of the experiences of the predators, he said, all predators say this, their best allies in abusing children are parents who don't talk about their sexuality with their children. Yeah? Because if this is a taboo subject and somebody does something to your child, you think they dare to talk to you about it? They don't dare to talk about it. Because mom and dad have always surrounded this subject with some kind of a silence code. Yeah, so please. Talking about sexual things may seem embarrassing and fearful to you. And why does it seem that way? Why do we sense this fear and awkwardness? I suppose that most of us have lacked a role model. We weren't very taught very well. I wasn't either. So it was a struggle for me to get where I wanted to be. Secondly, maybe because we feel ashamed. And indeed, there is a certain shame factor, I think. You know, sexual things are private. We talk about the private parts of your body when we talk to children. So there's a privacy surrounding the sexuality, and that's what God intended indeed. Yeah, when God speaks about sexual relationships, he even specifically says it's a private aspect. In Proverbs chapter 5, he says, let them be thine own and not strangers with thee. Now, this is a privacy issue. between you as husband and as wife. And maybe, therefore, we might feel very a sense of shame. But I would probably also add that there might be a sense of shame about the fact that you yourself know you have failed in this area. I know some parents think, what if I'm going to talk to my son about this, what am I to say if he asks, hey, Dad, did you ever do that? I better not talk about the subject at all. I don't want that question. Prepare yourself. They'll ask you. And if you then with honesty and with sadness and remorse can say, yes, son, I am guilty in this area. Your dad is not clean, or your mom is not clean. You say, I lose credibility then. Well, if you've waited for that question, maybe. But if you've come out of the attitude, son, your dad has some deep regrets, and therefore I want to speak openly with you, so you don't need to live with that. You gain trust. You gain admiration, you gain openness with your child. I really encourage you. And of course you can tell your children, and your children will also respect the privacy of that in their conversations. And then, of course, we don't know how, we don't know when, we don't know what. Go look on the book table tonight, then that question is answered. Now, I'll skip number C. You can read it. Success in sexual education is building relationships, and relationships precedes the rules. If you have not built up a relationship with your child, you are a failure. I read a statement this morning that I am written down for myself to remember. Failure is to be successful in the things that don't matter. Will you please write that down? Failure is to be successful in the things that don't matter. And the things that don't matter are material, financial. But the things that do matter are relationships with God and me, with me. And my wife, my husband, my children, my grandchildren. And we Dutchies were workaholics. Glad you're here tonight. You weren't working tonight. I do the work tonight. But am I right? We are workaholics. That's not a sin that we preachers preach enough about, because we are workaholics too. So right? I remember years ago, Reverend Hoffman, Senior, used to be my preacher. And he preached about thou shalt not kill, all the things which are killing about. So I asked him on the parking lot, hey, what, Reverend, what about smoking? Yeah, I can't say that, of course. No, because he was smoking. So that's why we don't preach against workaholism very much. But you know, fathers, when I would ask you tonight to make a business card about yourself, give you a blank piece of paper, and I ask you to make a business card. I asked my youth group you did the other day, gave them all a business card. I said, you guys make a business card about yourself, and I'm going to read them with you. What would you write on there? I did it with my men some years ago, and I got all these beautiful business cards. I'm a carpenter, I'm a farmer, I'm an electrician, I'm a blah, 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 blah. And one of them said, I am a servant of Jesus, a husband of whatever, his wife, a father of a number of children, and the very backside, very small letters, an electrician. That was beautiful. Your primary task is to build relationships with your children. You promised that to God. You didn't promise to God about your business. And if you don't build relationship with your kids, your rules that you set in, how good they are, will not be experienced by them as something they want to value. So first relationships, then rules that you set out to protect the relationship. I was sitting next to a woman in the plane, and it wasn't those days, they didn't have earpods, so now you don't talk anymore because everybody's with earpods on their phone. But this was a time they didn't have earpods yet, so I had a chat with her, and she was from France. Her father was a Moroccan Muslim, and her mother was a Roman Catholic French woman. I says, well, you grew up in, must be in a fairly strict household. Oh, yeah, she says, I hate religion. I said, why? That's all about rules. Yeah, my dad's rules and then my mom's rules. I couldn't survive in this. I've put away God. I says, I understand that. But that's not what God is all about, rules. She says, you know, I hate rules. I says, I love rules. Rules protect me. I says, I'll give you an example. You're a woman, and I have a woman at home who's my wife. Here's my ring. I have a relationship with her that is protected by some rules. The rules don't make the relationship, but the rules protect my relationship. And one of the rules is that I'm faithful to her. I've promised that. I carry the sign of her promise, and she carries mine. So there's rules to protect the relationship. Wow, she says, I never understood that. I says, right. That's how it's with God too. God wants a relationship with you. And he wants to protect it with rules. Now, if you make that clear to your kids, you want a beautiful relationship one day with one woman or one man, and that's why God has created rules to protect it. Use that imagery with them. So then they begin to realize that you're talking sense about the rules of God. Now, section 2, if you're not ever been given this talk, then I'm sure you feel like, well, this is quite new to me. But God is surprisingly positive about the sexual relationship. I already quoted that from 1 Genesis 1, 27 and 31. All things were created and very good. Now, I used a moment ago the statement that sex is sacred. You probably thought, well, that's a little bit strongly stated, isn't it? Sex is sacred or holy. Okay, let God then do the talking. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 4. Marriage is honorable and the bed is undefiled. Now, those of you who know Greek, I don't only know a little bit, but if I would translate it literally from the Greek, it says marriage is honorable and intercourse is undefiled. The word coitus in the Greek, which is our intercourse word. That's what God says. There's nothing dirty about this. This is something uniquely, beautifully dedicated, set apart by God for our enjoyment. Yeah, that's what I mean with sacred. It is special. It is protected by God, and we need to let our children see that. You know, when you look at the seventh commandment, obviously the second commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery. What is the positive side of that? Yeah, you can have two ways to look at the commandment. Thou shalt not steal is the negative side of thou shalt give. Okay, so then what is the opposite side of thou shalt not commit adultery? This one. Paul, 1 Corinthians 7, says this. Let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence. And likewise, let the wife render unto the husband due benevolence. What is he talking about? Due benevolence, is that bringing him a cup of coffee in the morning when it is cold? Is due benevolence taking out the groceries from the back of the car and hauling them back up the stairs after she's done the grocery shopping? No. What due benevolence means here? You are commanded to keep the sexual tank of your wife on full, as well as the sexual tank of your husband on full. And if he indicates to you it's getting empty, you say, oh, sorry, I'm tired tonight. Paul says, you're not tired tonight. I am needy tonight. Oh, yeah, but of course, I'm talking generalizations here. You understand? But this is the seventh commandment. Thou shalt keep her, his tank full. Why? So she will not be tempted, or he will not be tempted to fill it elsewhere. That's how God talks. That's how he meant it. That's how he created us. When you do your family devotions and you read with your family, you come to Proverbs 5, you probably all hope your kids don't listen very much. Or at least won't ask any questions about that one verse that really is so embarrassingly open. God says, drink waters out of the own cisterns. Okay, well, they probably won't understand what that means. You know what it means? Drink water out of your own cisterns. That means drink water out of your own tap? No, he's talking metaphorically about sexuality in this whole chapter. So drink water out of your own cisterns and running water out of your own well, and let thy fountains be dispersed abroad and thy rivers in the street, but let them only be thine own and not strangers with thee. And let thy fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of thy youth. Rejoice is in the commanding voice. Now the suggestion. And then comes this verse that we say, now wait a moment, maybe I skipped that one. Let her be as the loving hind in the pleasant roe, and let her breast satisfy thee at all times, and be thou ravished always with her love. Yeah, you say, this is Solomon talking. No, this is God talking to Solomon, and don't ask me why he used Solomon to write that. Now, but this is God's talking, saying, rejoice with the wife of thy youth and be thou ravished. You know what that word means literally in the Hebrew? Be drunk. Be intoxicated. Be overwhelmed with the delight and the joy of enjoying what I created for you and your marriage. Now I begin to understand that there are many marriages where the wife endures sex rather than enjoys it. And that's not how God meant it. If you're one of those, write down the title of this book. Tim LaHaye is the author. Tim LaHaye, L-A-H-A-Y-E, I think. It's an old book, The Act of Marriage. I've never updated the book and finding another one. I find it so good. I recommend it to all my young people. They can find it on Amazon for $1. So you go for it. It's an excellent book. I have let couples read it who've been married for 20 years. And they come back to me and say, wow, I should have had this book 20 years ago. I says, yeah, you should have. Yeah. If our sexual life as husband and wife doesn't function, there's something wrong in your relationship. This opens up for temptation. This opens up for distance. This opens it up also for becoming this subject not functioning in your family. And therefore, fathers or husband and wife, you need to invest in this. When I do premarital counseling, I give these young people, I give them this book on the last session about 2 weeks before they get married. And it says, look, there are some chapters in here for the husband only, for the man only, for the woman only, and blah, blah, blah. So I said, now look, you know what it says? For the man only. Don't you dare read it. And they look at me like, I will do it anyway. Of course, I wanted to read it. But what the author says, this is something that applies really to the female, and this really applies to the male. He says, now, you go read these chapters before the wedding day. And then promise me you take this book along on your honeymoon and read the rest again together. Yeah. There's other books. I'm sure there are better books or more up-to-date books. But don't hesitate if you are struggling as a couple in this vital area of your relationship building, which in our English language has the interesting phrase, lovemaking. Lovemaking. It makes love, indeed, if it functions well. I explained this this morning to the kids, something they probably never knew. But, you know, when they were younger and they scraped their knee, you know, it seems like the whole world ends, right? They come running at you. And, you know, you think, what's wrong with you? Oh, I hurt my knee. And you just about need a binoculars to find the thing on their knee. But it is real to them, isn't it? And what do you do as a parent? You put them on your lap. You stroke them, you kiss them, you cuddle them. What are you actually doing? What are you releasing in their body? Oxytocin. That's a hormone. That's released by touch. That's releasing, and that actually decreases pain sensation. It even decreases the thinking ability. And this kid is totally distracted. And they forgot all about this whole little thingy on their knee. It's no big deal now. Give a kiss on it. Phew, wonderful. All gone. You just did that. Now, when kids begin to touch each other and snuggle together, when you do that as husband and wife and you begin to caress each other and snuggle together, you're releasing oxytocin. In the common language, we call it the love hormone. It binds you together. It ought to. And I tell them, these kids, look, if you begin to do that before marriage with people that you're not ever going to get married to, it's like super glue. You get together and all of a sudden you realize, oh no, we ought not to be together. So you go, ouch! You don't want that, do you? That's what happens when you begin to interact sexually with someone else who is not your husband or your wife. You keep tearing your heart and your feelings because you've released oxytocin. God meant it to bind you together. And therefore, don't stop. Don't do this. Because it's not the time for it. That's still necessary for you. I remember when I became a young seminary student, one of the older ministers in the Netherlands, he said to me, you know, friend, when you begin your counseling ministry, and when you begin to discover that in the marriage, the sexual life doesn't function, begin there to ask, why is that not functioning? You guys used to be madly in love. You could hardly keep your hands off of each other. Why no more? Have you become so frigid? And in all my counseling ministry, I've remembered that. I'm asking straight on, and I have counseling on marriage life. I say, how's your sex life? Wait a moment. Why do you ask that? I said, well, that's the barometer. If that doesn't function in your life, there's something wrong in your relationship. So I could just spend hours here listening to all your stories, but if that functions, maybe it's not quite as a big deal. Yeah. So please give yourself and your children an incredible favor, and if this doesn't function in your life, then get some help. Pick up a book and begin to read and begin to take out, as Jay Adams would say, he says, every relationship problem becomes in the marriage bed a suitcase full of stones that we throw in the marriage bed. Now imagine that bed for a moment. Full of stones and briefcases and suitcases full of stones. Now, you cannot have a relationship in bed like that. And he says, every relationship problem, bitter words, unthoughtful actions, no appreciation or admiration or respect or unconditional love, and all that begins to kind of fade away, it will all end up in the marriage bed. And we miss the oxytocin experience. God meant it that way. That we snuggle and cuddle with each other Now, another reality of the right waters, friends, is really unavoidable for our kids. Kids are often very lonely in those years because teens are often too shy to talk about it when they begin with their sexual awakening. Kids are so insecure. They are so afraid. They don't look like the others. They don't smell like the others. Right? And they have all these things going on in their life. And I just had a laugh the other day. My son is just 15 and he comes home. He said, "I'm going to do push-ups every day." I says, "Why are you going to do push-ups?" I said, "I want to impress so-and-so girl." David, I've talked to you about that. Muscles don't impress girls. And here I would say, we don't have a problem in New Zealand, trucks don't impress girls. But we don't have that problem by us, at least not like here. But he still doesn't get it, right? He's still doing his push-ups. What does it tell me? The kid is insecure. He needs to find security, right? And in this lonely life, of course, he is sexually awakening. And he needs to have someone to talk about that insecurity. And I have a lovely open relationship with him in which he does do that. And so this is where I am so thankful to have built up this bridge the last 10 years already. Okay, that doesn't start this last week. That's been starting a long time ago. Without your straight talk, someone else will do the crooked talk. Yeah, I'm sure that for some of you, all this straight talk sounds a little bit too open to you. And if you are feeling that a little bit too open, you're just like my dad's generation. And maybe even not my dad's generation, I found out today again that even those younger than my dad are still not talking about this with their children. So I had to navigate my white waters alone. My body was bursting with all the stags running around. So since my father didn't speak, I go find my answers with my friends. Or at schoolmates. My culture did. You know, I grew up in the pretty pristine age of the 1970s as a teenager. That's nothing compared to today. Right? With the internet and the phones and the computer. I mean, if I had to do anything to find something, I'll have to go to the corner shop and hand some money to get something from off the counter. Well, I wouldn't dare in the world do that. Our kids don't have to do anything like that today. Yeah, so now, friends, more important than ever that you talk to children about it. Nobody talked to me about a wet dream. I didn't know what happened to me when that happened. And it was not until years later that I read something about it. Today I heard in the staff room in the school, somebody say that one of the girls had her period and their mom found out about it afterwards. Mom never talked to her about it. I wonder what that young girl had gone through when she discovered her period. Fathers, mothers, this is not right, is it? Nobody warned me about the danger of sexual compromise openly. Clearly. So I soiled myself and others. If only somebody would have just said and walked with me about these things. My culture did. My friends did. Somebody taught me sexual things at the age of 13. And I battled all the way through my teenage years into my early 20s when I finally got married. But never did I dare to talk about it. And these things I share with you only because my pain, I don't want to be the pain of the children growing up today. Can you feel that? And I'm sure that some of you are sitting here saying, "You know, Pastor, My journey was the same. No grown-up talked about me about girls, but my body did talk about girls all the time. These girls' bodies were screaming at me, and so I was curious to see what they looked like and felt like. Wrong, isn't it? I did. This is where I live with. I don't want my boys to live with that. And neither do I want the girls to live with that. So since in the teen years, our kids are most prone to experience the peer pressure, yeah, you need to build this bridge when you are before those years. You can't wait before these awakenings begin. Now, that brings me to my last section. But let's have dessert first. Yeah? In the meantime, have a little chat around your table. Come up with some questions. My second half will be much more in shorter and to the point of what are now some things I need to think about, how to walk my kids through this. All right, well, there are two questions that in some way I will answer actually in the topic. I'll read them anyway because that's what I want to come now. The question is, how do I begin talking to my young kids about this, starting to build the bridge early? And the second is similar. You mentioned you started the journey 10 years ago. How would the conversation go when talking to a 5-year-old about sexuality? Or is it or can it be healthy to keep their innocence? You know, I remember a statement by Dr. James Dobson some years ago. He says the tragedy of the 21st century is that our children have lost their innocence already at the age of 7 or 8. And so indeed, as I advocate tonight to speak to your children about sexuality, I don't advocate that you are opening up every aspect of this flower at an early age, obviously. So let me answer that as we look at the second part and the last part of our topic and give you some more guidance on that. So how do you guide them to remain chaste and embrace TSA? Now, those of you who are travelers, you probably think, what in the world does the Transportation Safety Administration have to do with this? But that's not what I mean with TSA. I mean TSA is total sexual abstinence before marriage. Total. And I mean total as total. And what is the first sexual thing in a sexual relationship? Well, probably a kiss. And kids say, you're bizarre. When you say you can't even kiss your girlfriend. Well, I didn't say that. I only say that total sexual abstinence is total, and I know from my own experience that a kiss kicks in my biology majorly. So if you don't want to go down the road, then maybe you shouldn't kiss either. But yeah, that's bizarre to these kids, right? So that's maybe a little bizarre to us too. But let's be honest. The way that we date today is totally different than the Bible times. Yeah, but do you have to go to Bible times? And no, I don't say that. I think you can learn a lot from your Bible times. And in the Bible times, young men, young women did not go out on dates together, ever. We do. Did you know that in the 1920s, what's that? About 100 years ago, it was a felony in this society to be caught walking in public with someone of the opposite sex without adult supervision. That's only 100 years ago in our culture, a felony charge. That's what you get when you speed. Can you imagine that? We let our kids go down in a car, to the beach, on a date. What's wrong with us? Why have we lost the plot so much in guiding our children to healthy courtship time? Courtship used to be on the front porch of the house. Now it's in the backseat of the car. And am I so puritanical that you think let's go back 500 years? No, I'm not saying that. But we need to get involved, parents. We need to walk with these kids so we don't have these situations arising that have happened to so many of us who are sitting here. And I'm sure I'm not the only one that speaks about this with regret. How do you guide them? How do we start this conversation about healthy sexuality? Through your daily family devotions as you read through your Bible every day. My motto is, be not silent on anything God speaks. I had a hard wake up to that. I'm a 17-year-old, I think an 18-year-old perhaps at that stage, young student going for teaching and the 3-star in Gouda. I'm in that journey for a month or two, and then you have to go Quaker, as they used to call it. You have to go to a school. So they sent me off to the kindergarten in Boskoop. So I was walked along for one day, and the teacher says, tomorrow your turn. Really? Yeah, I want you to tell the Bible story. Okay, well, I'd like to do that. Yeah, thank you. So what is it about? Well, tomorrow's about Joseph and Potiphar's wife. I says, I'm sorry, to kindergarten? And she said to me, what God is not silent about, you don't be silent about. So try your best. That's all I got. I'm an 18-year-old, okay? And I will never forget that experience. What do we talk about in these kids? I don't know how I survived it. I actually don't remember how I did it. But the point is, guys, when you start reading from Genesis, boom, you end up in Genesis 34 and Dinah is raped. What is that, girls? What is that raped? Why? Wow. How come that Dinah was raped? Where did Dinah go? Where was Dad, Jacob? Where were her brothers? Wow, what did Dinah do in Shechem? Now, this is an opportunity to talk sense. Bible is talking about it, you talk about it. And a little bit later, we read about the story of Judah and Tamar. Well, that gets even harder, isn't it? Judah using a prostitute, getting her pregnant. And then we have Joseph and Potiphar's wife, and then we have the story of Amnon's sexual assault of his sister Tamar as he raped her and then dumps her. And then we get to Leviticus 18. I was just talking about this here on the table. And probably in Leviticus 18, I don't know if you know the chapter, but that's a chapter that talks about the sin of incest. Talks about the sin of sexual abuse. Verse by verse needs to be explained to the kids. Yeah, God says you shall not come near to any that is near to kin. So does that mean you can't sit on the couch together? No. It says you cannot uncover the nakedness. So, and I, as a father, take down your pants. I am not allowed to do that. Unless we're at the doctor's office or unless mom is there. Kids, you don't need to allow me to take down your pants unless mom is there. That's what I told my kids. Because God says so. Now what I just do, I protect my children against sexual abuse by teaching them that. I don't go any specifics, but I told him, look, this is private. You have to protect that. And if you don't protect it, and there's nobody else to protect it, who then will protect it? So please, let's talk about these in our family devotions, about these sexual boundaries that God sets in the family and in the home and in the yard and in the barn and in the back of the hedge, in the garden, and wherever. Brothers and sisters are not to uncover their nakedness. So, boys, listen to that. You are never to uncover the nakedness of your sister. God says that's a sin. That's something that you don't do except you go to the doctor with your parents there. He may maybe at times having to examine that part of your body, but nobody else. Now, that's teaching sexuality in a healthy way. Now, and you don't read that chapter every day, but you probably, if you read your Bible consistently, you read it probably every other year. You get the exposure to that every other year again and again, because it needs to be repeated and be repeated. So do not forget to talk about daddy not allowed to do that, and mommy's not allowed to do that, and uncle's not allowed to do that, and cousin is not allowed to do that, and teacher at school's not allowed to do that, and the elder in the youth group is not allowed to do that, and your minister's not allowed to do that. Nobody's allowed to do that. Because did you know that 97% or 94%, don't quote me on it, of abusers are people that the child knows and trusts. It's only 6% strangers. Yeah, if I teach my kids, look, when you cross the road, watch out for the red cars only. You don't do that, right? You say, watch out for all cars. No, that's exactly what we need to teach, because they're all dangerous. Well, do I have to make my kid then totally fearful? No, don't have to do that. Just factual explaining what this is. When we come to Proverbs chapter 5, the one I just read, well, that may be discussed. Yeah, God says I may enjoy a sexual relationship, but children, where? Where may mom and I enjoy our bodies in a very personal and an intimate way is only when we're married. And do you do that then? Yeah, I love your mother. And we love each other, so we cuddle together. That's all you need to say to a five-year-old. And by the way, if you're healthy parents, they see you do it in the kitchen, don't they? Hug each other and kiss each other. Normal. Non-sexual. But affectionate. That is education. Healthy. Today somebody said to me already at the staff room in the school there, I have never seen my father and mother hug each other in public in the home. That's not healthy. That is making it somehow a secret thing. I have grown up, and that's a good thing my dad did. He hugged my mom all the time. They were affectionate. And I've seen that as something beautiful. I've seen it as something delightsome. And so let your kids see that in a healthy way. And that's what I mean with the proper modeling. Model non-sexual affection within your family. Let your kids hear, darling, I love you so much. My kids will hear it from me, that I adore my wife. And they all begin to say, but they love it, because if dad loves mom and they see it, big good thing. And if mom loves dad, not just a big deal. Correct? Boys want to see you loving your spouse. Guys, they do. Hold hands. Be affectionate. No suggestive references to your sex life. That is absolutely unfitting. That's between you and your wife and husband. That's reserved. But celebrate the joy of this part of your relationship in a positive context. That's modeling. We don't allow sexual jokes in our families. I think one of the weaknesses in our churches, and I'm going to say it real plain, is you have a little bit of the Islam culture. That we speak and act degradingly about the women and about the girls. That's to me a sore point and a sensitive point. But I meet it too much in my work of counseling with couples, and I do a lot of that, not only in my own congregation, but through all the emails and so on, and Zoom sometimes as well. And I just notice how often degrading attitudes I discover, and they are passed on from you as fathers, husbands, to your children. The way you speak to your wife at home is modeling. Hey, wife, get me that coffee, please. Oh, Lizzie said, please. But get me that coffee is not an appropriate way of talking to your wife. She's not your slave. She is your equal, though, in a different role. Yeah, and we need to begin to realize that more, friends. Because the way that boys sometimes talk about girls, that's not knights in shining armor. We need to show them you are protectors. You are nurturers. You are leaders. And you have a task as a man, not to put people down, but to protect people. And that comes from your and my modeling of how I protect my wife, how I protect my children and my daughters. Yeah, so model that. So important. Then thirdly, there are tons of opportunities in which you have daily encounters of situations which are modeling, teaching times. You know, when God says in Deuteronomy 6, you know the verse, and thou shalt command this day, and these words that I commanded this day shall be in your heart, so you need to make them yours, and you shall teach them diligently unto thy children. When you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up, and when you drive along the road, and when you go to the grocery store, and so on. In other words, God has given you everywhere golden opportunities to connect sacred commands of God to the situations we deal with. Your kids are not blind. If they walk to the grocery shop, they don't only see the candy shop, they see all the magazines too. And I've made it a point every time I walk there with one of my kids at least, you know, what you just saw there, that's the trash. And by the way, I pity those women on these covers, don't you? They are being used. Used. Don't you ever be like that, David. Used women. That's the grading. So that's just a little seed you plant. You got all kinds of opportunities. This is the natural way of teaching. This is what God wants you to do. You see a driving billboard, driving by, and you see a billboard of a Mercedes-Benz. See, David, what's the relationship with a beautiful woman and a Mercedes-Benz? Do you get it? Mercedes-Benz. It's a car, right? You have those here. Okay. When I drive with my girls, I used to say, aren't you offended by that billboard? Offended? Yeah. The way they use you women to sell cars. I think you women ought to make a protest against that. That is so degrading. To use you to sell a car. Get it? This is teaching. Yeah, and you don't have to do it by every billboard because you do it all day. I get that. Hearing about a sexual abuse case. Don't gossip. But if you hear about a sexual abuse case, let's make it a little moment again of talking about our children. You need to protect yourself. Mom and dad are there to protect you, but we're not always there. So you need to be yourself protected. When do you start and how do you start? Remember that question? Number D. I saw you buying all the books already. They're sold out, aren't they? That's how I do it. I started a book. Wonderful little book for girls only, or what is the title there? I forget. Very little, simple book. Kids 6, 7 years old, 8 years old. There are all kinds of wonderful books. I think I have a list of them, perhaps a small list of them, on the back of a few books. But I don't have the really young books because that was before my time and they came out of all the young books. But reading a young book with children about sexual things that are very appropriate. There's books about bad pictures and good pictures. There's books about bad touch and good touch. There's books about body awareness and privacy. And those are for children that are 5, 6 years old. And you're not talking about sexual acts. You're talking about the sexual reality and the protection of it and the privacy of it and the specialness of it. You're not giving any details, so you're not destroying any innocence of kids. I did this with my son. Now, my latest example, and we talked to them, and then, you know, he became about 11 years old, and Believe it or not, he went to school in Oakfield, to the public school. And he's in, that was not even 11 years. He was in third grade. And he came home with stuff that I didn't believe kids would do in third grade. They were reenacting sex acts on the playground. Boys. And David had no clue. Comes home with words that he just popped out of his mouth. What did you just say there? Where did you hear that? Oh, they say it at school all the time. So thank God for your Christian school environment. I know that's not safe proof either. But so I think he was about 7 or 8 years old when I needed to start introducing him to something of this sexual life. Because he came with the big question. He says, Dad, how do you get babies? You have that question? Yeah, God created them. Oh, okay. Nice. Thank you. That worked. It worked. But it didn't work because a little bit later he comes, Dad, how does God create babies? Cha, boy. That's special. So what do you say? Well, I thought, you know what? David, you remember the other day you saw those two dogs on top of each other, right? And you said, what are we doing? Well, they're mating, Dave. Oh, okay. Well, what were they doing? They were creating babies, puppies. And I still see this little face. As an 8-year-old, really? You do that too with Mom? Yuck. That's exact what he said. Yuck. I says, David, that's fine. But now at least I answered your question. It wasn't a month or two later. Dad, can I talk to you about this again? The little wheels are going, aren't they? And I had opening. So then I started taking books. Then I started, Dave, we're going to have to talk about this. He was a bit younger than I would normally do. But that's because he was going to the public school in Oakfield. I got to start this before these kids soil the young mind of this kid. Right? So then you use a book, friends, talk about boundaries, talk about appropriateness, in a very childlike, beautiful way. And how far do you go? I always let the kids guide me in the questions. When he said to me, yuck, I said, that's it. And we're going to, well, let's pray about this together, David. Because I do always close it with prayer. And thank you for asking. And if you have no question, you make sure you come back to Dad, right? Sure, that will. That's how you start these conversations. Of course, as the child matures, you could find better books. So, E, treating a book as a father and a son, and a mother and daughter about their sexual development and sexual relationship before and during their puberty. Yeah, you need to gauge the start of that with each of your children. That's different. Yeah, young girls should talk with their mom before their physical development starts. And show them the beauty of how God is preparing their bodies. And the same with boys. You should have these very elementary talks before the hormone stage goes titanic, I call it, and girls becomes magic. Yeah, I love it. I give my son a book. I said, Damon, how about you first look to this book for a while, and then I will come and we'll read together. And I sit on the bed with him in a private room, and we read a chapter together. We talk about it, and we pray about it, and I share because he has questions. And say, you know what? No, I want you to reread that first chapter again, and when you're ready, let me know. Next day, he's ready. I wasn't because I had a meeting. So I said, no, sorry, David, not tonight. So I'll try to do it later this week. But well, I promise later this week. Dad, do you have time tonight? Bursting, you know, with curiosity and desire to learn. So that was the first book. And then after that, I find another book that goes a little bit farther. And now he's read all the books I had really on this whole subject. But now I'm finding books that talk about manhood. What is it now really to be a man? And just to sit down together with your son. And my wife would have done it with her daughters. That's the way. You bind, you bound, you give them the good ammunition to fight the battle. And indeed, that sometimes includes that you have to do some real straight talking with your children about the difference between males and females. Yeah, I includes always a discussion of the two scriptures, 1 Corinthians 7 verse 1 and Matthew 5 verse 28. Now, you all know that verse. Why God said it is not good for a man to touch a woman. And in Matthew 5, God says that, you know, when we look upon a woman and lust after her, we've committed adultery already. Our children, daughters and sons, need to better understand what still don't understand. This morning, I gave an example to the youth in the high school. And maybe some of them misunderstood it, and I want you to talk with your daughters about that, if they heard that example, because I gathered that some of them misunderstood what I was saying. But I told them, I says, you know, if that side door there opens, and all of a sudden, a stark naked young woman walks to the door, what will all guys do? Most of the guys, most of them. They'll look. And they feast their eyes, even though their conscience might say, that's wrong. No, no, don't look. But that's how we are. Our eyes are wired to our sexuality. That's why God made women so beautiful. Then I said, now that door opens and a stark naked guy walks in. What will you girls do? Oh, yuck! Cut your clothes off! Correct? Am I lying? No. And I told them, guys, girls, that's correct. And she should get her clothes on too, but he should too. Right? But that's how we react differently on naked skin. To you guys, it makes no difference. Well, maybe not entirely, but what the skin looks like or the body looks like, because for you girls, it's touch. That's important. Not necessarily physical touch, but your emotional touch. How someone cares for you. How someone protects you. How someone sacrifices for you. How someone serves you. That is how you touch them. But that's not how it goes with us guys. You know, if you make us a meal, 5-course meal, well, okay. We like that. But that doesn't necessarily turn us on, you know. But if you show your body and the shape of your body and the lines of your body. And I didn't say it to the girls this afternoon. I say it to you. You know what's hardest for us men, females? It's not total nakedness. It's a little bit of nakedness. That teases us to think beyond what we see. And you know, if you have that talk to your girls about their clothing choices, and they understand the biology. Now, some of the girls thought, when I said, look, I'm just a normal man. I'm 61 years old. And guess what? I don't like to go to beaches. Ever. Because it's a battle for me. And they thought I'm a pervert. Well, you go tell your daughters that every one of us who is totally normally wired has that struggle. Correct? Now, I don't see any head nodding, but I wanted to see heads nodding. Be honest. Now, some of us may have a little bit more wires than others, but that's what the Savior means. And he doesn't mean that because he doesn't want us to enjoy. He wants us to enjoy in the right context. And that's marriage. Only. I love my wife for many other reasons, but this is one reason that really just kind of stunned me. Through some extraordinary circumstances that maybe some of you know, I married the younger sister of my first wife who deceased when she was 29. So I knew Michelle, my present wife, as she's growing up as a 12-year-old in all the years until we married. And she was she's 10 years younger than me, and Melanie was 6 years younger, older than her. So there was a bit of a time in between those two. And you know, when I married her, or at least when I started courting her, I said, Michelle, there's one thing that I never dared to ask you, but now I dare, because we're about to get married. She says, when I saw you grow up as a young teenager, there's something that I always was really deeply struck about. You knew how to very tastefully dress yourself. You got a sense of fashion and a sense of beauty. And you adorned yourself well, but you did it always so modest. What was your reason for doing that? And this was her answer, mothers. And I want you to see if you can teach your daughters that. She says, Arnout, I know that God has given me a beauty, but he's given that for one man, my future husband. And I didn't want any man ever to look at me in such a way that I want you to look at me soon when you're my husband. I'll never forget that. That young lady knew what her nakedness and shape of her body would do to any normal man. And I don't know where she got that from, but I was so stunned. And you know, our girls need to learn this. God has given them a beauty to be enjoyed and to be delighted in by one man who may one day be, or hopes to be, her husband. Anyone else is not allowed. And explain to them this connection between eyes, sexuality, and tell your young men. Now be careful with your words, young friend. How you are talking to these girls. How you're showing the emotional attention. How you butter them up with courtesies and all kinds of beautiful things, because you're kindling a fire in her. And we need to teach them how to protect themselves, to keep those male's eyes in their pockets and their hands in their sockets. Sorry, to keep those male's eyes in their sockets and those hands in their pockets. You get it? I'm a dyslexia man, so here we go. I find it very, very distressing when I still meet with, sometimes in leaderships, elders and ministers and men that somehow cast the blame for sexual impropriety on the females. Oh, because they dress so bad. But at least let's not go that way. If a female dresses bad and provocative and flirtatious and acts that way, that's her problem. But that is no lessening of the sin of the guy who does something wrong. And I hear that too often. Yeah, if only those girls wouldn't dress so bad, these guys wouldn't act so bad. That's not true. That's, again, putting the shifting the blame onto the females. And that's wrong. Don't do that, please. So, teaching the law of progression, you know, I actually didn't have with me what I was going to give you. But there's a law of biological progression. You all know that if you're married, you begin to cuddle with each other and kiss each other, the biological clock goes. There's all kinds of physiological processes taking place in your body that readies the body for the ultimate sexual intimacy of the man and the woman. We need to explain it to our children. You know, I said to them this morning, as I sat in an airplane yesterday, and we hear these engines roaring, and they begin to pull that airplane. You know, can you imagine that halfway down that runway, the pilot says, okay, I better quit this. I better stop this. It's too late. Once he is there, halfway speed down that runway, you got to keep going. But that's the same as sex. There comes such an urge in us when we are sexually active with our bodies that we feel like we need to keep going. Guys, we are not to start this on the runway. We're not to start on that until married. It was a powerful illustration that someone gave. Picture a wedding in a picturesque little church in Pennsylvania. And the husband and the wife-to-be standing right before the minister, about to lead him into the vows as we do. And as they're standing there, all of a sudden there's a girl at the back of the audience that walks down the aisle and stands next to the groom. And the bride says, what is she doing there? Oh, don't worry, nothing. Just let it be. And well, the bride is very believing, she lets it be. But before she's finished, there's another girl walking down from the back, standing next to the bridegroom again. That's two girls now, and the bridegroom and the bride. She says, George, what are these girls doing here? Don't worry. Just don't look at them. And then there comes a third one. And finally she can't handle it anymore. She says, George, what are these girls doing there? And she says to her, sorry, I've given something away of myself to them, but the rest is for you. And I challenged these girls and boys just this morning. Do you want your wedding day to be like that? Parents, I know you don't want your wedding day of your kids to be like that. So please tell them about this law of progression. If you don't want to have these boys or these girls standing next to you on the wedding day, beside you as a couple, then don't start on the runway. Total sexual abstinence. And they will thank you for it if you've helped them to walk that way. And that's my last thing. Teach them straight talk when they go out of friends and when they start the courtship. Fathers, you need to take charge to have a TSA talk to any young male who wants to court your daughter. Have you done that? No, I'm not saying, that's right, I was not going to make you give a guilt trip today, so we're not doing that. But please, if those of you having daughters that are going to be of the age that are going to be asked out, teach your children from the early days, Dad is here to protect you, and I want to walk with you so that one day I can walk you down the aisle, knowing I am leading a woman not just dressed in white, but a woman who is still a virgin to the man of her choosing. I'm there for you, kid. I want to walk with you. So anybody that dates you is going to have a talk with me first. Teach your kids that. Your daughters will appreciate it if you have a relationship with them. And so, yeah, I've had my chats with son-in-laws that were of that age and coming. And you know what? It was helping them to know that I'm committed to TSA. More because I didn't have that. Walk with your sons. Keep them accountable. Keep talking to them about how is your purity grade. I used to have purity grades with my kids. I would ask them every week, says, how's it going with your purity? Yeah, struggling, man. Well, then, let's hurry up setting that date. Yeah, Dad, man. No. If you can't contain, burn, then get married. Yeah, well, we've got no time for that yet. Okay. Then what are we going to do? Because we don't want to burn, do we? And then help your kids with strategies. You know, what are you doing? Why are you making so hard on yourself? Why are you sitting for an hour or two in the car? Why are you going out together? Sit here in the garden. We don't hear you, okay, from 100 meters away. But I see you and it helps, isn't it? And don't be so silly. Use common sense. Now, this is where I'm going to end with you today. By now your head is spinning. I give you a list of some books. Your bookshop man here has a lot more books. I've looked at most of all these. I have most of all these. I don't have the Passport to Purity and Passport to Integrity that somebody has pointed out to me. I looked at the material. It's a little bit too young for my son, so I didn't buy it. But it's actually a really nice program. Buy it at Amazon. And just helps you to walk with your kids through this whole journey. I did check out lovewiseorg.uk. Wonderful material out there. You can download and buy. Again, I didn't use it myself because it just was pointed out to me only a month or two ago. But there is a lot out there. And please, if you find something useful, I think these people, they like this, they know that, and they can put on the book table for others as well. May I remind you of one last statement? Failure is to succeed in things that... Now, what's the end of that? That don't matter. What matters most is, of course, a relationship with God, our children and God. Right? But secondly, relationship with your children and their relationship with their spouses and their relationship with their children and so on. Let's make that a priority. Thank you.